1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Miss Betty, can you hear me? It's good. Fred, can you hear me? Can you hear me? So that's normal. Welcome. For those of you who are wondering why we don't have another class that you can go to, it's Brian Newberry's fault. He felt like this topic for the quarter was appropriate for everyone. And I will tell you, we as an eldership, we agree. It's not very often that you'll take a whole quarter and dedicate it to stewardship. So me and the other three gentlemen are going to rotate, so you get I get to kick it off tonight. And we are going to delve into the topic of giving and stewardship and why it's important and all the different things that are associated with it. There's a lot in the Bible around this topic, and it probably doesn't get preached on much from the pulpit because in our society today, I believe that televangelisms and all the people you see on TV who are always asking for money create a persona around the religious world that we probably avoid the topic just to keep from subliminally sounding like them. That's just in one man's opinion. But I think that just the attitudes in society today cause us to do a lot of things sometimes in the church that maybe we end up avoiding topics more than we should. And this may be one of them just for that reason. It's just an opinion. It's not fact. But I saw a few heads nodding this way, and some might agree or disagree. But it's a very important topic in the church, and I think we probably avoid it more than we should. So we're going to spend a quarter talking about stewardship. So to start with, get my glasses on, Proverbs 4:23, just a basic text. A lot of meaning. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. So, that's a very powerful verse. Everything we do, all the actions we take, how we approach what we're challenged with in life, are all derivatives of what's in our heart. Agree with that? So, I think it's appropriate that we start this series talking about our heart. And when I talk about our heart, your heart ends up causing you to be who you are and how you act. Here's a thought, too, you might think about. Prosperity is only an instrument to be used, not a deity to be worshipped. So, we live in a very affluent country. And we demonstrate that, or we live it. Even some of the poorest of our poor are far more wealthy than a lot of places in the world. And we take it for granted. And we get consumed with our materialistic lifestyle, just by nature, because we have so much. We take for granted. And if we're not careful, we will spend a lot of our waking hours focused just on that. And that's a risk that as Christians, we have to catch ourselves and remind ourselves on a regular basis that that's not why we're here. Now, the fact that we've been blessed as a church, as a nation, as individuals in varying degrees puts us in a unique position to be even more powerful Christians than we might realize that we could be, just by leveraging and utilizing the blessings that have been bestowed upon us. So as we enter this series, the first thing we're going to talk about to kick it off, obviously, is our attitude towards the topic and what kind of attitude we have as Christians. Because if our attitude's not right in anything we do, but especially in this topic, if we have an attitude that doesn't approach this topic the way it should be, then we run the very, very strong risk of condemning ourselves and not realizing it, because it's part of what we're expected and required to do. And our attitude on this topic needs to be right. And this is one of those things that we do privately oftentimes. We do it on the first day of the week as we're commanded. And where are our attitudes at when we approach this is extremely important. So tonight, as we get into this, we'll talk about six different attitudes, but of people in the Bible as examples, good and bad, that we can begin to look at as we enter this topic for the quarter. I think it's interesting, you know, when you look at this topic, there's a lot of truth in the Bible that tells us what we should do and how we should do it. And we approach truth in many different ways, but a quote, I'm going to read a quote here from one of our brethren in the brotherhood. The reception of any truth depends upon the attitude that one has towards it. How many times are we real quick to challenge or condemn people that we're talking to about other topics outside what we're talking about tonight, baptism or some other doctrinal issue that we know the Bible is so easily, it's just so plain, and we know it's true. And as we present that truth, the way we present it and the attitude with which we present it causes someone not to receive it. Y'all just staring at me. But I think how we approach this truth personally, this is a personal requirement of us. This is not something that we go around talking about. It's a personal thing. But how our attitude is towards this is extremely important. This is almost something that if our attitude's not right, nobody else probably will ever know it, because they don't see how much your check is, or they don't see what you do for charitable things outside this building, or they don't know anything you do, but you do. And you know how you view others and how you, statements you make. But when we're talking about our personal attitude, if it's not right, it's almost like a silent sin no one will ever know about, right? We don't publish every month how much Calvin gave or how much I gave. I mean, it's not something we publish, right? It's a private, personal matter. But it's only silent and personal and private to us as we think, but it's not private. Who knows? God knows, right? And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I think it's interesting that as we get into this and we start talking about it, how many times have you heard people in the church say, I get tired of hearing him preach about giving. I don't want to hear it. Or, if I know the class is going to be about stewardship or giving, I'm going to try to find another class. I don't want to hear it. Is that a good attitude or a bad attitude? That's a rhetorical question, but I appreciate you answering. Sometimes you hear people say he can't talk about anything but money, or some people say about others, he's just doing that to be seen. He's just giving. He's making it known that he did something because he wants to be seen. That's dangerous ground when we start trying to read someone else's heart, right? This is something we need to be looking inward. And this topic is very personal. And if we were honest with ourselves, when you hear people say those kind of statements, if they were being truthful about what they were really thinking or their attitude, what they might be saying, if they would say it out loud, is I'm too selfish to give. Or another, I spend so much money foolishly that I don't have anything left to give. That would be a harsh, painful, truthful statement for us to say out loud, wouldn't it? But sometimes that's what our attitude reflects. Because you wake up at the end, or you get to the end of the week after you got paid, and you realize you spent a whole bunch of money on this and a whole bunch of money on that, or you did something with it. And I'm not going to harp on money all night, but I mean, that's the topic, right? It's stewardship and giving. And but our attitude, if it's not right, if we could say out loud what our attitude really is, if we're not being a true, honest, loving, liberal, giving Christian, those are really the things you would say out loud if you were required to actually say it out loud if your attitude's not right. So I love luxuries more than I love the Lord. Risky, isn't it, in our society? After I get everything else that I want, if I have any left, I'll give that. Some of us live that way. Some of us live that way early in our lives, and some of us recognize that, whew, well, that's not right, and we change. So we all mature as Christians, different rates, different paces, different speeds. But what we'll talk about this quarter is, hopefully, as we go through this, we'll recognize that how we should be treating this subject from a true, honest Christian perspective, the way God expects us to, I think we will see amazing differences here. Now, we're a very giving congregation, don't take me wrong. But I dare say that a lot of us probably have opportunity to do more. So, and that's not a plead for more money. I'm just being honest about, this is a topic that didn't start in front of me, it starts behind me. So please don't take anything I'm saying tonight as if I'm preaching, because I'm just as applicable and responsible as everyone else that's a member of the church or a good faithful Christian. So, that being said, Mark 10:17-22. Larry, would you mind turning there? Let's start with the first attitude. Rich young ruler. Yeah, Mark 10:17-22. Speak out loud.
When he was going forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked him, "Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" Jesus said unto him, "Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, keep fraud not, honor thy father and mother." And he answered and said unto him, "Master, all these have I observed from my youth." Jesus, beholding him, loved him, and said unto him, "One thing thou lackest, go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. Come, take up the cross and follow me." And he was sad at that saying, and went away grieved, for he had great possession.
Okay. So, why did the ruler approach Jesus? He sincerely wanted to go to heaven, it sounds like, right? What do I need to do? I want to follow you. What's required of me? And he was given, obviously Jesus knows his heart, and he goes through all the things, the spiritual requirements or the laws and those kind of things, and he's feeling pretty good about himself, right? I don't think money has even crossed this young man's mind at this point, because all the things that Jesus laid out, he's like, "Yes, got that one. Yes, I did that and that and that. Well, all of these things I've done from my youth." He's feeling pretty good, right? He asks one more question. "Is there anything else that I'm missing?" And Jesus' answer was, because he knew his heart, "You need to sell everything you got." Struck a nerve with that one, didn't he? That's a tough one. And I don't even know, we don't know, because I don't know if the rich young ruler realized the control that his riches had on him at that point until he was asked to give it up. How many things do we allow to consume us that we don't even realize they're consuming us from a worldly standpoint until someone says, "You got to give that up." And then you're like, "Whew. It's harder than I thought." So, this kind of set him back a little bit. His attitude toward money was stronger than his desire to be part of following Christ, and he walked away sad. I think it's one of the, I think that's something we have to ask ourselves when we're looking at our attitude. What's the most important thing in my life? Yes, sir. Right. Sure. Right. Yeah. And it's the daily life, right? Get rid of all the things that are holding you down. Take up your cross and come on, let's go. Cody? So you need to slow down, okay? You're going to get way ahead of where we're going. Typical preacher school student. Cut straight to the chase. You didn't go to Memphis School of Preaching, did you?
Where's that other place?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. It's a joke. That's a joke. I know. I'm just... No, but we sure wish we could. Because that way we could compartmentalize everything that surrounds our world and make sure we push all the right buttons so that at the end they're all green and we're good to go. Leslie. Yeah, yeah. Jim? That's right. That's exactly right. So that's a good segue into the second attitude we want to look at as an example. Cody, if you could read John 12, 3 through 6. John 12, 3 through 6, and we're talking about Judas in this one. We always talk about Judas as the one who betrayed, but we get some insight into him earlier before the betrayal, and I think is interesting. So this one's, it's interesting. I like the fact that they define Judas's heart in this verse after he's made it appear that he wants, we need to use this money to help other people, when really that wasn't his motive. Evidently, Judas was pretty good at handling money, right? Or they wouldn't have had him as the treasurer for their group or keeping the box with the money. He was in charge. So he was probably pretty good at keeping up with money or counting money. And one of the things, this is an interesting statement. Temptation commonly comes through that for which we are naturally fitted. Think about that for a minute. So Judas was naturally, it seemed he was pretty good at handling money, right? So if you're really good at something, if you're not careful, whatever you're really good at from a worldly perspective, if you're not careful, that will become the temptation that actually draws you further away from Christ. Think about how many people today are really, really good at turning $100 into $1,000, or this business into a big business. And I mean, you look at all the people who are successful today in the finance world and the ones that are really good at it. What is the temptation that oftentimes follows those individuals? Well, it's not only that, but it becomes, is enough ever enough for a lot of those folks? It becomes the temptation to be want more and more. If you're good in real estate, no offense to anybody here in real estate, but I've had friends in the church in real estate who are really good, and they were really good at selling nice homes. And every time the next biggest, newest design came out, that became their next obsession personally, not just to go sell them, but then they wanted that one. Not realizing that the whole time what they're really good at is drawing them deeper into something that's consuming their life. So please, anybody in real estate, that's no reflection on anybody here, but if you're really good at something, you got to be careful, because it can draw you, it can be the temptation that draws you away from your faith. Calvin? It defined who he was in his mind, which became consuming, which became what he was more concerned with than truly following Christ. Judas, same way. Good at handling money, so much so that he became obsessed with making sure he's getting some out of the till, and it's taken over, and because he's good at it, now he's around it all the time, and he's untouchable. So I'm not saying this is not, this principle of the temptation can draw you in, if something you're really good at can draw you, that can be the temptation that draws you away. It can cross many spectrums. But in regards to this principle tonight, in regards to money, this is a perfect example of Judas, where he was good at it, it became the temptation that drew him away, and he wound up taking money to betray Christ, right? So it led to the ultimate end of his life. So that's not an attitude we want to have either. But we have to be careful about things we're really good at, to recognize where those blessings come from and how we use those as Christians to be the example that Christ would have us to be. A man's sight depends upon what's inside him. What we see depends upon the condition of our heart. So if we really, really like somebody, it's hard to find fault in them, isn't it? And if we really dislike someone, it's hard to even recognize the good when they actually do something good. So the attitude of the heart will dictate and cause us to go all kind of different directions. So we need to be mindful as we talk about the different attitudes. Judas didn't care anything about the poor. He was concerned about the money. So his heart, he tried to give the appearance that he was, but clearly he didn't. Acts 5, 1 and 2. Jeff, please. Third attitude. So we've seen the attitude of the rich young ruler, the attitude of Judas. And now a couple that's we've made famous. They made themselves famous. Go ahead. Acts 5, 1 and 2. So we know how this story goes, right? They wanted to look like they were doing a good thing, and they gave the perception or gave the impression that they were giving all, but they kept some of it back. Was it wrong that they kept some of it back? Right. It's nobody was required to sell all their land and give all the money to the disciples. But they wanted people to think they did. So that's an attitude that we have to be careful of as well, right? How many of us want people to think good about us? Nobody? You're all lying. Everybody wants people to, you want people to think good of you, right? If your attitude is all about that, then it becomes twisted, right? If you're more concerned about what people think about you than why you should be doing the right thing, then you're going to get sidetracked. And Ananias and Sapphira were more concerned. Their attitude was, I want to look good for what I'm doing, as opposed to, I just want to do something good, and it's not about me. In this topic, it's not about me, and it's not about you, it's not about us individually. It's about God, and it's about doing what's asked of us because it's the right thing to do, not because we want people to see us for something that we're not. Any comments? I hope so. Because that, if people think better of me than I think I deserve, I would hope that implies that you've got some humility in your life, which is what we should be. We should be humble servants, not looking for the attention to come our way, but what can I do for others? And that's, if somebody feels better about you than you really think they should, just give them a hug, and thank them in a humble way and keep doing the best you can. Because it's when we talk about attitude, which is what we're talking about tonight, in regards to this topic, but our attitude in general as a Christian should not ever be about ourselves. It's about others. Joy, Jesus, others, you. You're the wise last. Larry's mentioned that several times in the sermon. If his wife tries to pull him away and keeps him from going to heaven, he's going to let her go. All right? So, no reflection on Larissa. I don't know why he always uses that example. Probably because he can get away with it. But our attitudes shouldn't be about giving the appearance. So Malachi 3:8 talks about which is worse, lying to God or robbing God. Right? If you're acting like you're doing the right thing when you're really not, nobody else may know that. God does. You just lied to him, right? And if you're lying about it, which is worse? Lying about doing the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing with the wrong attitude? Either way, it's a no-win situation, right? It's a lose-lose. You're either robbing God or you're lying about it. That's harsh, but that's what he says, So, anyway, we move on. Acts 4:36 and 37. Here's someone who we're going to get to a good attitude here. Steve, Acts 4:36 and 37. Mine says Barnabas. I'm not sure. I think it's okay. Make sure no one thought Barabbas was the attitude we were. Everybody knows who Barabbas is, right? He wasn't a good man. He got released early, but it wasn't because of good behavior. So Barnabas, right? Son of encouragement. He sold land, gave it all for the right reason. didn't try to mislead anyone. He had an attitude that he wanted to help. That's the kind of attitude that, as Christians, I hope we have. I think we could probably stop now and spend the next 10 minutes talking about Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma and the one behind Irma and the amount of charitable activity that's going on right now in our country, and especially in the church, to help the disaster relief program that's out there. And I dare say what's being done is probably not to be seen. I hope it's not to be seen, but it feels like people just want to help. I mean, we got people in the country now who who are, you know, how many people, I wonder, have texted the Red Cross that number that it's $10, right? Nobody knows. Those aren't public. Nobody sees your cell phone bill. The attitude to do things for the right reason just because it's right is the attitude we should have as Christians when it comes to giving correctly. And Barnabas was a perfect example of that. Comments? Man, y'all are terrible. Y'all are making me preach tonight, Larry. So why did he do the good deed? Why did Barnabas do that? Good attitude, right? Jim? Sure. Right. Yeah, that's a win-win. Mark 12, we're not going to read this whole text, but this is probably one everyone was probably wondering when we were going to get to, the fifth attitude tonight. The attitude of the widow, poor widow. Who remembers the story, right? Jesus is standing there watching contributions go, and what was common in the temple when people made a contribution? Yeah, and if it was a big one, wasn't uncommon. I mean, was pretty common for someone. We need to blow the trumpet on this, right? Anybody? I want people to see me when I'm about to do what I do. Anybody ever go to a restaurant where they got one of the bells as you're about to leave? You can ring it for good service. Or people get a nice tip and they ring the bell because somebody just gave them a good tip. Draws attention to what just happened and you know why they did it. Then this poor widow goes by. What are you laughing at? You never seen it? All right, I got to take you somewhere. It's probably in Alabama. I can get you in and out. Nobody know it. We'll be all right. But you got to ring the bell on your way out. Arby's? You ever eat at Arby's? I knew there was something wrong with you. No, so the widow goes by, and everyone knows she puts everything in she's got, right? You think she did that to be seen? She just wanted to get through, right? She knew it was the right thing to do. It's all she had. She gave to the point of what I dare say would be sacrificial giving, right? Which is back to where Cody tried to take us 20 minutes ago. Stopped him. But if we don't have the attitude as Christians to where we are willing to give to the point to where we're sacrificing something, right? How many of us truly give to the point that we feel like, wow, I had to give something up for that? That's tough, right? That's a tough question to ask ourselves, including myself. When you think about what we do as Christians, when we purpose in our heart, which we're supposed to do, as we've been prospered, liberally and cheerfully, but if we're given the leftovers, which we'll talk about a little bit here in as we move forward, but she gave to the point of sacrifice, and she was recognized for it. Not because it was a lot of money, but because she had the attitude that Jesus recognized was a sacrificial heart willing to do what was required. All right, we've got 5 minutes. Attitude number six. Let's talk about David. 2 Samuel 24:18-24. Ken Lowry, will you read that? You got a loud voice. 2 Samuel 24, 18 through 24. Technology's moving slow. 18 through 24, yeah. So here, prophet tells David, King David, to go to this servant and build an altar. And he gets there, and the servant's like, here, just take it. Just here's the oxen, here's the, just no charge, just do it. And David's attitude was, I can't give something to God that I did not, that I didn't sacrifice something for, right? I can't do that. I would never give anything that didn't cost me anything. Because if our attitude is, I'm willing to give up my time as long as it doesn't interfere with football on Saturday. I'm willing to give of my money as long as it doesn't get into my cable bill. I'm willing to do this to help this charitable contribution as long as it doesn't interfere with my vacation fund. All of that as an attitude within ourselves, if we're not careful, we will end up being willing to give that which cost us nothing. And the example, the attitude of David was, I can't do that. I have to give to God on something that I had to give up something for, right? Now, 50 shekels of silver was probably, obviously not a lot of money to a king, but the principle and the attitude that's demonstrated there was, God is worthy of more than something that cost me nothing. And I think, to your point earlier, we're not asked to sell everything we have, and like the rich young ruler was. But if everything we have is hindering our attitude from recognizing how we should be as good stewards of what God has blessed us with, then we got to do a heart check. We need an EKG to find out if our heart is right. Daryl? Yeah, we are commanded. We're commanded to do a lot of things, but following those commandments as Christians, because we love Him, right? If you love me, keep my commandments. If our attitude is not centered around our love for God, then obeying the commandments that are in front of us, we almost find ourselves back with the very first example that we started with, the rich young ruler, and we begin checking boxes on commandments. And we'll look for, the question becomes, how much should I give? And I'm not getting into that, but it was clear in the Old Testament, right, what they were required. It was a commandment. check the box. Measure 10th, first. I give the first of the livestock. I give the best. I give 10%. Boom. And it was very methodical and very mechanical, and I'm following all these laws. As we move into Christianity and following Christ, it's not about a percentage. It's about our heart, and it's about giving to the point of sacrifice because it's the right thing to do, and it's about our attitude. And as this quarter starts, I think it was important in the way the whole series is laid out, we start with the attitude first, and then we'll build on that throughout the next several weeks as we rotate through teaching the class. I appreciate your comments. I hope none of you took anything that I said tonight as an indictment on anyone. It's more of a, hey, let's study this together. Recognize that we all have a heart. Sometimes it's not in the right place. And let's try to get our attitudes and our heart right as we move forward through the study this throughout this quarter and see what comes from that. And I appreciate your attendance and your comments. Thanks.